ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at FAO in Midtown. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, Branham out to do a very important job for all of us tonight, and that is call a winner, as hopefully the Cougs are on their way to that NCAA championship tonight in San Antonio. So he skips out. Sean Mapes and I get a chance to take you for the final, give or take, almost an hour here on the Killer Bees. And, Sean, we were talking about the Rockets before Jeremy skipped out, and we went right to the pretender-contender status. I'm curious your thoughts on that, and then as a basketball aficionado, that game last night, because that game last night, the more that I was watching everything unfold, the more I thought that that could not have been a better precursor to the playoffs for a team that basically wrapped up the two seed.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time looking at the remaining five games on the schedule and that they're going to play basically every contender in the Western Conference. And by the time they locked up playoff positioning and they locked up now officially top four status in the West, we did have a little bit of like a, what if they just kind of pack things in, get things ready for the playoffs? And this team is doing the exact opposite. It's winning all these games, all these impressive games against the top of the West. You know, a team like the Thunder, one seed by a mile. The Golden State Warriors, a team that's, 20-3 now when Jimmy and Steph play together. So they're doing it against the absolute tops of the league. And I think it has changed how I feel about this team in the playoffs, where I don't know if I'm ready to go full-scale contender. Actually, yeah, I think they can make a Western Conference Finals. I think they can do that. And that's kind of generally my barrier for, are you a contender? Can I see you make the Conference Finals? Because I look at these the Western Conference playoffs, and I think that there's really a lot of teams that they should be favored against, or if not, they're very slight underdogs against as far as first round opponents.
See, I just, from a first round perspective, the one thing that scares me is you got those four or five teams log jammed with the same record right now as this week unfolds in the Western Conference. You don't want to see an Anthony Edwards in the first round. I don't think that you want to see a Clipper team with a healthy Kawhi along with Harden. I thought that was a really savvy addition in Bogdanovich. The fact that they've got a big, strong center that is quietly having like almost possibly top three all NBA center like numbers that you can go against. And they don't. And those teams have experience with veterans that have been there and done that. Whereas the Rockets, again, as good as they've played and as good as they are, until you've been there, you don't realize that the playoffs is a different animal and it requires a different level of toughness and focus, and every little mistake is magnified to where that concerns me.
Yeah, the playoff scarring or the lack thereof for, I mean, your entire core, save for, two starters and Steven Adams,
right,
is going to be really the biggest hurdle in any of these series. I can definitely see, a game three or a game four where you do see the team's kind of youth. And we see it in these regular season games a lot where it kind of feels like emotionally that they kind of get out of sorts. Like they get, I guess it's like an aggression that kind of boils over to a point and starts becoming detrimental to the team. Look at Dylan Brooks as a primary example. The last time he was in the playoffs someone where that happens, and now he's kind of in a leadership role on the team. So that scares me as well as playing playoff defenses, especially crunch time playoff defenses. And I don't know, you're really going to have to depend on a Jalen Green hot shooting night as far as this team finding good offense when it really becomes crunch time.
I mean, and you bring up the point, it's almost a controlled aggression that wins in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's not as aggressive as you can be, and the fact that every mistake, like they continue, forever and a day I've been preaching on the fact they can't close games. And they, for like 43, 44 minutes, they play exactly the way Udoka wants them to play on both ends of the floor. They execute, they build up a lead. And then when they need to execute down the stretch in crunch time, it becomes ISO ball, it becomes falling asleep on defense, it becomes trying to do too much and throwing the ball away. Now, this weekend was a step in the right direction, but when you start playing teams that are playoff savvy, that have guys that have been there and done that across the board, more than just, like you said, the three veterans on this roster, it makes a massive difference in basketball. And that's the thing that I have to see before I start to believe. And it's not to take anything away from the team as a whole. Like I said, this team has already become better, and it's a success story no matter what happens the rest of the way.
Yeah.
But no matter what seed they are going into the playoffs, until they get their feet wet and show me that they can win a series, I can't seriously put them down as contenders.
Yeah, I think they're in a spot right now where I can see them. So right now they have like the possible playoff matchups, and for the West, for every team in the playoffs, and for the West, it's the least helpful graphic in the world because basically every team 3 through 8 can all change spots because they're all so tightly packed in there. But you look at this list, and there's a bunch of teams where I could see the Rockets beating any one of these teams. The issue I have is that you're going to have to stack that on top of each other 3 different times to go to the finals. So I think that if they find themselves in a series against the Clippers, like while you bring up a good point that they're playing very well, I still need to see Kawhi Leonard finish a playoff series once. I just need to see that. And we all know that, okay, if without Kawhi, the Clippers offense then relies on James Harden in the playoffs. Let's see how this one works out. So I think that there's a lot of matchups where you see like the Nuggets are kind of falling back to the pack. They're not firing on all cylinders. So there's a lot of series where I can see them winning. I can see a path to them getting 4 out of 7. It's just you have to do it so many times against these upper echelon teams. And this is a team that, as you said, like doesn't actually have the scarring of having to play the same opponent 7 times in 2 weeks, having to beat them 4 out of 7 times.
Yeah, and I think you look at, like, Denver is really not playing for much, and I think that they're one of those teams that are veteran NBA champions that realize the most important thing is if Jokic and Murray are healthy, and we're healthy going in, there's a good chance we can come out of the West.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think at a certain point, they played that, double overtime game where Jokic played ridiculous minutes, and it was like, okay, let's not push him too far and drain him before we even get to the playoffs. Because if he gets there and he's healthy, he's the best player on the floor basically every given night. So I look at it and I go down the list and I said, does Dallas scare me? No. But Anthony Davis does. And so they have someone that I think the Rockets would be challenged to stop. Sacramento doesn't worry me, although they have veterans. I think you can beat Sacramento. But like a team like Memphis, we remember from a majority of the season they were top 3 seed. Now, they change coaches, and that might do as much to give you an advantage as anything else. But the way John Morant's playing when he's playing his best basketball, if they're healthy, they can play with you, and they're as young as you are. But they've been there before, and I think that's where it all keeps coming back for me. I know that Udoka knows how to coach in the playoffs, but I know that Tari Eason makes a hell of a lot of dumb plays down the stretch in games that you just can't make in the playoffs. Jalen's the same way. Jalen can shoot you in, or he can turn it over or misshoot you into a loss at the most inopportune time, and it can cost you a series, not just a game. And those are the things that scare me the most.
Yeah, I'm very interested this last 3 games for, I think every team in the league only has 3 games left. And I'm really interested in these veteran teams, Lakers, Nuggets, Clippers, Warriors. That's about all the teams that are called like super veteran laden, and how they attack these last 3 games, and whether you do see jockeying for, you know, trying to play the Rockets. Now, it's going to be hard because it's the 7 seed, and I think in general you want to avoid the play-in at all costs if you can help it. But I wonder what the team, if you gave the other team's coaches truth serum and you're like, what team do you most want to see out of the 7 or 8 top contenders in the West? Like, who would you want to see? And I wonder how many would say the Rockets, or if they would see it and they'd go, man, you know, that would be such a pain in the ass to play against these guys 7 times.
Candace Parker said it last week on TNT, and I had the sound somewhere in there from last week's show. We never used it. But she basically said, aside from the truth serum, most teams in the West right now, especially those teams that are jockeying just to get in the play-in, they want to play the Rockets for exactly the reasons that we both spoke of. Because you're right, on the positive side, from a Rockets perspective, no one wants to play a team in which you can throw 3 and 4 above-average defenders at another team's best wings. But at the same time, they want to play a young team that's never been there before and realize that they got a legit chance instead of playing Denver or the Lakers or the team or the OKC Thunder, because they have experience and so much talent and go-to guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for a lot of these teams, like, yeah, I mean, there really is no easy outs other than maybe Memphis, like, for other, not specifically a matchup with the Rockets, just, like, if you're to power rank these teams, like, yeah, give me the team that coached or that fired their coach a week ago and hasn't.
They're so good, but they're so, right, it's so up in, it's yeah, so up in the air in flux that they could go one of two directions. They could go either way, and it wouldn't surprise me.
They haven't played, or they haven't beaten a team with the above 500, right? I think they beat. Wait, do the Pistons have an above 500 record? They do. So they have beaten a team above 500 since, like, February. They happened this weekend. So I think Memphis is an interesting team because, like you said, it would be a hard out for the Rockets because it is a little bit of, like, the next step past where the Rockets are development-wise.
Yeah.
But they're also a team I can see, like, kind of losing both games in the play-in tournament and not making the playoffs. Like, I can see this going super south very fast.
Well, we know that Ja really wants a shootout, and you know that's where he excels. But at the same time, you got to be careful, and there was a tongue-in-cheek there, you got to be careful about the fact that as young as they are with some of the talent that they have, that they've changed an entire offense with two coaches with 10 games to go in the regular season. Yeah. And I just think that the recipe is there for disaster more than success. But the Rockets got to catch the right matchup because I just don't think that they match up well against the Lakers. Jeremy and I disagree on that. But I think when you can put Luka, who's carried a team all by himself, with LeBron, with the fact that people sleep on Austin Reeves all the time, and he's become such a huge factor for the Lakers, that's tough for the Rockets to, like, swing all of their defenders at and say, well, we've got a legit chance. So good on the Rockets for wrapping up the two seed. That's what makes it a success for me even more. But to me, it's a TBD before I think that they can be contenders, and I don't think it's this year.
Yeah, I think I'm just, like, one step past you on that, where it's like I like their matchups in these first rounds a little bit more, but you have the right idea with, like, there's not a team that I'm like, oh, yeah, give me these guys. Even the Grizzlies, which would probably be my answer, I'm still not super, you know, that's still like a 60-40 kind of proposition where I could see them losing pretty easily. But as far as, like, and I'll kind of wrap up on this, that as far as the teams that you actually don't want to see, for me, it's what you touched on there with Luka. And it's like, I actually just don't want to see the team that has Luka and LeBron on it, or the team that has Jokic on it the most. Like, those are the teams I'm cool.
Well, SGA too. I put
too. And I'll throw Ant in that conversation as well.
Anthony Edwards, for sure, from last year, he proved it. SGA, for the most part, has proved it. He's going to be an MVP or, you know, a runner-up MVP. And the rest of that team is so damn good and so versatile that you don't want to see them either. I think the best part of being the two seed is you wouldn't see OKC until the Western Conference Finals. Now you got to beat a veteran team somewhere along the lines that are probably going to have two-star minimums that you are still trying to figure out. So, you know, you guys can get in with us, 713-780-3776. Who do you want to see in the playoffs? Who don't you want to see in the playoffs? Who can the Rockets beat, and who do you have concerns about? As you can text and call, and we're also on social media. We're going to continue to roll on. I want to run this by Sean. The fact is that as bad as it was for the Rockets and for the Cougars and for a lot of the Texans, three of the four primary teams in sports in this city used to be at rock bottom, or they're very well close to it. But really, as a fan base, there's not many that have it better than Houstonians and their sports fandemonium right now, regardless of what the Cougs do tonight. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more on the other side. Stay with us. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.
The Killer Bees are broadcasting live from inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at FAO in Midtown. Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
No Branham as he prepares for, dare I say, for the first time in the history of the Killer Bees, bigger and better things. But when you are preparing to call an NCAA championship game, you get all the time that you need, Jeremy Branham, and hopefully you bring that title back to H-Town where everyone would have a field day tomorrow, and that would be awesome. So Sean Mapes joins me as we take you up till 6 o'clock tonight talking about all things sports. And at the same breath, I used to live in Midtown. And FAO here in Midtown is an unbelievable spot if you want to hang out and get the best of all worlds. You can get all the sports action that we want to see, and you can watch the title game tonight. There's a lot of Cougs fans that are showing up already. But they're also, it's like a throwback to the video game era of Space Invaders, Guitar Hero, Big Buck Hunter. All the different games that you loved when you were going back to arcades are here to be played while you're hanging out in a great bar with good food, with the fact that you can sit here and you can watch these games on beautiful television screens with a lot of beautiful people, honestly, in the Midtown area. You need to check it out. Go to FAO Midtown and check it out today. We're up here on the third floor, beautiful view of the Midtown area. But everything that I mentioned and so much more as you get ready for Cougar basketball and a big title game tonight, which you can watch here as well. Sean, we were talking about this from a Rockets perspective last segment. But the thing that I was kind of thinking about this morning when talking about the landscape of Houston sports, you know, Jeremy even said during the show, hey, it's a great time if you're a Houston basketball fan. It's honestly a great time if you're a Houston sports fan, period, when you throw the Cougs in with what the Texans have done and how quickly they've turned it around with what the Astros continue to do. And now with the Rockets that we just got done talking about going all the way up and wrapping up basically the two seed, but how quickly that they've gotten there and the paths that they've taken. I think in a lot of ways, because the Cougs aren't a professional team except for the players that get paid, you look at the Cougs differently. But when you look at it, I don't know that Coach Kelvin Sampson had anything other than the toughest road to get to the success that he's experiencing, because of the fact that when you think about it, Espada took over for Dusty, Espada took over a team that was World Series ready. When you talk about from the standpoint of the Rockets, yeah, they were young, but Udoka knew when he took over that there was enough young talent there to work with that he could do some things. You knew from the Texans' perspective, they got rid of Deshaun. They had the draft picks to kind of start the rebuild, to get going in the right direction. And granted, I do think that D'Amico's done a hell of a job turning it around quicker than I thought they would. But when you think about how bad the U of H program was, from the facilities to the lack of attendance and support, to the fact that the team itself sucked and wasn't winning games, Kelvin Sampson left a Rockets assistant coaching job that I think that he really was starting to enjoy more and more. He took over for McHale at stretches when McHale would miss time with things that were going on with his family. And he knew that his day was coming. I remember having the conversation, Bill Worrell was deeply involved in getting Sampson to the U of H. And the biggest selling point was, hey, Houston's a hotbed of basketball. If you can just recruit five of the top 20 to 25 players in the city, you probably got a team that could make the tournament. But to think that you could take a program from where it was with those kind of expectations to a team now that you can honestly say has a chance to compete for a national title almost every year, his recruiting class says it's going to be just as good next year. The guys coming back say there's still going to be that veteran presence that makes them who they are, both offensively, defensively, and culturally. The fact that Sampson used to walk the campus to try and almost beg people to go to games now has a sold-out, brand-new facility in terms of the practice facility. The Fertitta Center was completely redone, and it's one of the top programs in the country. Man, I'll tell you what, Houston sports fans, they got it good, and they got a great one with Sampson.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, they got lucky, but they got very lucky that Kelvin Sampson wanted to stay in Houston, wanted to go back to taking a college job, because he, like you said, he was the assistant on the Rockets and probably wasn't too far away from at least getting those kind of interviews to be a NBA head coach. And so getting that kind of talent, that kind of coaching talent, when we talk about the talent of the player, Kelvin Sampson's an immensely talented coach. He knows how to build something from the ground up. Like you mentioned, there a lot of these, like the Espada, and to a lesser degree, Udoka and D'Amico, like they kind of are taking over midstream of a talented roster. And like you mentioned with the early videos with Sampson, some of them are making the rounds this weekend of him, like you said, begging people to come watch them play, and pictures. I think it was a picture from like one of his first games, his first season on the job, and it's him in the huddle, coach, and you could see, like, behind him the backdrop of nothing but empty seats in the old UH basketball gym. So, like, to take – this is honestly one of the most, like, ground-up renovations of a college program. Just basketball, football, whatever, that really I can remember in recent memory. Like, the other ones, you have to go back a couple decades where it's like Bobby Bowden at Florida State. Like, it is teams way back in the old days before kind of the money disparity, I think, really set hold, where it's harder to climb the ranks. And obviously, like, NIL, things like that help a little bit more now. But
think about that too, Sean, from the standpoint of there wasn't NIL yet.
No, for
yet Kelvin Sampson, just to keep the program afloat, regardless of his basketball skill, knowledge, and recruiting ability, he had to go out before NIL and do all the things that have to be done now. He had to beg students to go to games. He had to raise money from the boosters. He was going to Cougar fans. They had like a bus. They had two of those like party buses painted up where they would drive all over the place. And he sent like a mass email to reach like, I forget how many, if there's like 10,000 Cougar grads, saying, hey, if you love what we were trying to do with this basketball program and you want to see us get to where the Blue Bloods have gotten, can you please give us $1,000? Can you give us money so that we can get at least a fraction of what these Blue Blood programs get so we can stay competitive? There's no other coach of that magnitude. Bill Self's not doing that. Krzyzewski didn't have to do that. You know, even at Gonzaga, they don't have to do that because they're the only game going. And this is Kelvin Sampson's love of the game at this university. And like you said, kind of not just grassroots, like from ass bottom.
Yeah.
Doing anything and everything until he got it where he needed it to go. And now he's enjoying the fact that he's keeping it where it needs to be, even in a bigger conference with NIL.
Yeah, I mean, being like a Houstonian for my entire life, I cannot think of a single time that I thought about U of H basketball, like contemporary U of H basketball. It was Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler, and that's kind of it until Kelvin Sampson showed up, in the 2010s. So I can attest that it was such a dead program that he, not single-handedly, because Kelvin Sampson himself said, I don't want to take all the credit. I don't deserve to have all the credit, but he's the primary guy who took this from the graveyard to now being in a perennial Sweet 16 threat. It's crazy.
You know, and I'll tell you what, Sean, unlike you, I do remember time to time that I would think about U of H basketball. And you know why? Because I knew they were playing Calipari's Kentucky teams, and I knew that I could get a ticket for $5 yeah, and go down in the third or fourth row and be right on the court to watch some of the best talent that Kentucky recruited before they go and compete for a national title and play in the NBA. Because Hoffman's Pavilion was basically an echo chamber with no home court advantage, where if you wanted to see some of the best teams in the country, if they happened to be playing at Houston, it cost you $5.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good point, that the being in a good city or in a big city, there is a give and take to that. There is a drawback to that, and it's if you don't get the ball rolling, like, people have much better things to do on a Saturday night than watch some basketball team that they don't care about, they never cared about. That is not the same thing in a lot of these college towns where these, you know, like you said, Gonzaga, they're the only show in town. So
yeah,
they string together a 20-win season, people are going to start showing out.
In Lexington, Kentucky's the only thing going.
Exactly.
They got the entire city by the palm of their hand.
Yeah, and so to take this, and again, to be one win away from a national championship, to be, what, 1-point underdogs? This isn't even like Butler, like Brad Stevens at Butler. Like, this is a guy who's taken a team and has built it into a juggernaut in the sport, which, again, I cannot think of the last time that's happened in college basketball.
No, and the thing is this is not a flash in the pan. This is kind of like the last time we saw this was the Zags at Gonzaga, where they came from the depths of nowhere and literally were in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they became a national prominent basketball team. But this is what he's quietly done when you look at the body of work and all the winning seasons and all the Sweet 16s and the Elite Eights and the Final Fours. And the only thing missing is the actual title. But at the same time, they're not done. That run that I just mentioned and all those accolades happened in the last since Kelvin Sampson took over the program. Now he's got two or three five-stars coming in to kind of fortify the fact that the majority besides Roberts of the starting lineup and Cryer could come back for another year. And if they're not going to be high draft picks like some of the kids on Florida or Duke, why wouldn't you come back to a point where culturally you know how to play?
Yeah.
Nationally, you know how to win. And now from an NIL perspective, they're kind of with the conference backing and making a need for it. They're competing from a financial standpoint, too, to get these kids to come here. And if you watch them on TV, that's the best calling card in advertising in the world of, hey, if I'm thinking about, you know, deciding between three or four schools, and U of H is one of them, and I see this on TV to go with what they can offer me and the fact that I can be in Houston, I'm in, man. Why wouldn't you be?
Yeah, that was always one of the pushbacks I've had this entire year where people say, like, this is U of H's best chance to win a national championship. I always think, well, it's their best chance so far to win one of these teams. It's their best team so far to win one of these things.
If Jamal Shedd doesn't sprain his ankle, there's an argument to be made they already would have a championship.
Exactly. And you look at what, like, the foundation of what they've built. Like, this isn't a flash in the pan. This isn't two good recruiting cycles and, oh, my God, look at the – they're scrounging together NIL to keep these guys here for one last ride. It's no, like they're going to have a great recruiting class next year. They're top five recruiting class next year. Mm-hmm. They're bringing in the talent because, you know, to go back to Saturday's game, the first 30 minutes of the game, I was like, you know what? These are just two awesome teams, and one has really good college basketball players on it. The other team has NBA players on it. And then it turns out, that was wrong. The NBA players don't know how to inbound the ball. So I think that this is a team that this isn't the last time they're going to be in a situation like this.
No, they're not. They were there last year, and I think they arguably could have won the title if Shedd doesn't sprain his ankle. They definitely would have beat Duke. This year, they're there again. Next year, they should have every chance, like you said, with the recruiting class, the guys coming back, and this entire culture Sampson thing going. There's no reason to believe they can't compete for one after that. And because of the fact that success breeds success, kids in high school right now are watching this, and they're all going to be watching, like Jeremy said, with the TV numbers tonight. They were watching this weekend, and they're going, I want to play for that dude. I want to be a part of that. Why wouldn't you? Because you're prepared for everything. They are so together, and they have each other's backs on anything. And they represent, you know, a city where you can have everything in your backyard, and you're not in, like, small-town America where you're living in, you know, College Station, or you're living in Lexington. You're living in the third largest city in America with a whole lot going on, and you're a part of something that's going to be big time for a long time. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way they play, too. It's an easy sell to people that don't have a giant attachment to the university, people that are Houstonians, like that you just watch them play, and you're like, man, they just have a bunch of badasses on their team, and they're not out here, you know, playing the way everyone hates now, where they're, you know, a ton of jumpers and trying to get to the line, and they kind of play soft. It's like, no, this is the most hardcore team that there is in America.
You love the fact that Sampson goes into kids' living rooms and said, I'm not here to kiss your ass and feed you with a silver spoon. I'm going to coach you hard. I'm going to say some things you're probably not going to like. If you're not about that life and you can't be, you know, tough love coached, then I'm not the guy for you. But I'm not changing what I do. You can decide where you want to go play. But if you want that and you want to get better because of it, come play with me. So I think that's an awesome way to do it because so many coaches are so willing to succumb to the pressure to try and just compete. So kudos to Kelvin Sampson, win, lose, or draw tonight. But we're going to take a break. We're getting late for a break. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Sean and I will give you exactly how we think it's going to go tonight. We'll talk about and break down what we think could happen between the Gators, the Cougars, and the ultimate national champion that will be crowned later this evening. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.
Thank you. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at FAO in Midtown.
Back for the final segments of the show. By the way, get your car wreck of the day in. If you guys nominations for car wreck of the day, we do it every day in the final segment of the program. 713-780-3776. You can call, you can text us your suggestions for car wreck of the day. We are at FAO Midtown. It is a phenomenal spot. It's fantastic. It's the old school video game arcade approach to a great sports bar, an unbelievable environment, atmosphere, third floor, Midtown, kind of like an overview of the area. Beautiful sunshiny day. Cougar fans are starting to show up, and it's a great spot to watch the game with everybody tonight. Come on out and check us out in Midtown at FAO. Sean, I mentioned this. We had Sean Kelly on earlier in the program, the voice of the Florida Gators and a dear friend of mine from our NBA days and such. But I was curious your thoughts about the fact that this matchup in itself is interesting. I think as much as Duke was probably a mismatch from the standpoint of advantage Cougars in the way that they had the three young kids, they had veterans, they had Final Four experience, and everything that Duke brings to the table, I think this matchup is a lot of similarities when you look at these two teams. And I mentioned some of this with Sean, the fact that both teams shoot a high percentage of threes and make a high percentage of threes. Both teams are really good defensively. Both teams are versatile enough to play different styles. And both teams have more than one weapon that can beat you. I was surprised early at the spread being 1.5, but I think they probably got that right too.
Yeah, this cannot be more than a 2 or 3 point spread in either direction. So I think 1.5, sure, give it to the Gators, I guess. Just in the fact that I think for most people, they have kind of a name on the marquee type of guy with Clayton, their Walter Clayton Jr., their point guard, that in a big game, most of the public's going to gravitate towards that. I understand that, and I think it's an interesting, like you said, an interesting contrast for the Cougars, kind of what tournament basketball is all about, is that you have to focus on this big team, this big Duke team with a big wing, a big man in the middle, and no one under 6'5". And then in your next game, it's you have to chase around a 6'2" guy who is playing like Steph Curry right now. I'm not saying
he's playing
is Steph
the
Curry.
College version yes. of Steph Curry.
He very clearly grew up watching Steph Curry. You can just tell by the way he plays and the shots that he thinks are available to him are very Curry-esque. And credit to him, this run he's made a lot.
Well, the thing is too is watching him the other night against Auburn is when they needed a bucket and he knew they needed a bucket. He was ready to shoot the minute he put his hands on the basketball. Yeah. They were running, you know, high screen, and they were running double screen up on the perimeter on the wing. And the minute his hands touched the basketball, he was in the shooting motion, and it was, I mean, effortless. And and he had form, and he was knocking them down successfully. And then when they started trying to take that away completely and try to take it out of his hands, now he puts it on the floor, and he gets to the basket with dribble penetration. And now he's getting three-point plays, and he's getting layups right down the center of the defense. And you're like, no matter what he turns out to be on the NBA level, he is elite when it comes to college basketball.
Oh, absolutely. And he's a guy that Duke just did not have this year. They didn't have a guard who can play the kind of, all right, everybody, hop on my back kind of deal in these, you know, late-game situations. How you go 10 minutes without a field goal made is that you don't have a guy who – comes down the court, like you said, ready to pull, and is absolutely like, hey, we're not going down without me either getting a good shot or generating a good shot for somebody. You know, give Flag all the credit he deserves, and he is one of the best players in college basketball. He's going to be the number one pick. But right now, his offensive game isn't at that level where he can go, all right, I'm just going to just clear out for me. I'm getting a shot here. And Clay is exactly that type of guy, and Florida has a little bit of the it is what the Warriors do with Stephen Curry, where the other guys on the team are also like, I know he's going to give it up and then he's going to make a move and I'm going to get it back to him and he's going to shoot some off balance three and it's going to go in. So I think Florida is just a team that is playing super well right now and is like you said, a completely different kind of matchup for the Cougs than Duke was.
And I think that from the standpoint of how I see the game going tonight, I think that they are going to defend him well. I think that the fact that you have all five guys that are in the starting lineup that can rotate and play the perimeter. And Robert showed you the other night he's capable of staying in front of guards when there's a mismatch or a pick situation and he gets shifted off of, in this case it was Flag. But I think that the other thing that people sleep on is that Florida gets 64% of their offense from the perimeter. It's not just him that gets it done. There are other guys that knock down the three. And I think their bigs are very vulnerable. I think their bigs are inexperienced. I think their bigs, I saw that Brome was talking to them and getting in their heads, and it was kind of taking them out of what they wanted to do. And I don't think they're ready for the Cougs' physicality. How this game is officiated is as important as the Duke game was, maybe more so, from the simple fact that if they're allowed to be physical on the perimeter, and they're allowed to be physical the way they normally like to play, and they don't get into foul trouble, I think it's a massive advantage for the Cougs. Florida's deep. They can go 2-3 deep at every position. They shoot the three ball well. I think the advantages that the Cougars have are inside and from a physical standpoint if they're allowed to play that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I watching that Auburn game, I was not blown away with Condon, their big man, Florida's
big
man.
Did you see that? Brome started talking to Condon on the very first play. He scored, and he basically told him, it's going to be a long day. You got nothing that can stop me. You're too small to. And he looked like he saw an alien. He froze. He scored 1 point through like the first 25, 35 minutes of the game.
Yeah, no, he finished the game with 1 point, Condon.
There you go.
So at 5 fouls, 1 point, 4 rebounds, 4 more than the Duke center. That is, especially seeing how Malawak got absolutely bodied in Saturday's game. For me, the microscope is going to be on Condon and the rest of these Florida bigs as to can you compete for 40 minutes with this Cougars basketball team, because you're going to need all 40 minutes. You cannot stop at 30. You cannot stop playing the last 5 minutes, the last 90 seconds when you're up six. You still might lose this game. So that to me is going to be even arguably bigger than the perimeter scoring for Florida, because I know that the Crier and Sharp, like, and Wilson, like, they're going to be able to compete on defense against and make it hard for Martin and Clayton. It is, to me, the inside matchup of how, not even like, can Roberts destroy this dude on the block the way Broom does, but just can they, I mean, I basically make him quit. Like, it felt like they made the Duke center quit.
Well, but you also mentioned it, but yeah, obviously Broom's on a different level, but we saw Roberts go right at Malawak and score on him.
Yeah.
No matter how big and how long his wingspan was, he got that lefty hook and that little jump hook off and was effective with it. And now you're talking about teams that don't have that kind of perimeter, I mean, that kind of big man defense, and you're looking to take advantage of it. I think Roberts could have a big game tonight, the same way I think Uzan fits much better in this style of game against this style of team than what Duke brought at him. And I don't expect him to get in foul trouble. So I think it's, again, that's why that point and a half is so important. I think that the Cougs will do just fine defensively. The big thing is people sleep on Florida's defense, and you're going to have to find offense from all three guards for the Cougs. And not that they all have to score 20, but you can't just have Crier being lone wolf like he was in the Duke game in the first half.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, this is something that I've said basically since the Sweet 16 with all these U of H games is, I think this one might just be first one to 65 or 70. I think if Florida plays on their terms and is able to run up and down the court, get out in fast breaks, I'm more worried about U of H losing that type of game than I am of them losing 65 to 60. You know, I mean, you saw it with Duke. They got to 67 and then just stood there at 67 enough for U of H to hit 70 and win.
What do you think, because I know that the number there was 70-75, and they said if you could hold Duke under that, you could win, and you know, it almost came down to that, how much Charles Barkley said it wasn't going to happen. But from the standpoint of the fast break up-tempo, I almost think it's in U of H's best interest to not run with this team. Because when Florida runs, they're devastating on the break. If Florida has to play half court, I think you have a better chance of defending Clayton Jr., but I think more so importantly, you keep them from scoring easy buckets.
Yeah, I mean, you, I don't want to see Martin with the head of steam in an open
that
court.
That dunk the other day. That was filthy, that dunk the other day.
It was ridiculous. It was like the kind of the highlight of the tournament so far, like barring like a buzzer beater or anything kind of like that. Just a phenomenal play where it just gets you out of your seat. Like, that was the play. And like you said, I don't want to run with these guys. I want to depend on a set defense if I'm the Cougs. And on offense, I'm throwing it to Roberts and I'm letting Cryer create. That is how I'm playing this game. I'm playing it slow.
I think Uzan can have a game. Like I said, I think that he can pick his spots, but he's good run with the runners and he's good in the lane and he can knock down the three. I think he could be a guy that, as bad as he played against Duke, I think he could step up big tonight, too. It'll be interesting to see. So we'll hope for that Cougars victory. You guys can let us know what you think. We'll talk about it tomorrow. We got one segment left to go in the show, and that means car wreck of the day. We've got plenty of nominations. If you got a few that you want to get in before we get out of here, 713-780-3776. You can call, you can text. Hit us on social media. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
Houston's independent voice for sports, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Let me see. Give you all f***ing bone, you prick. Where's my f***ing money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
You heard the voice guy in his intimidating fashion. It's the car wreck of the day, where we point out things that probably were more of a car wreck than a success. And that's why I go to Sean Mabes. I'm doing my Pauly for you, Sean, just to make you feel at home. I'm going to do my Pauly doing voices to get into a bit on a segment. Sean Mabes, what would you like to nominate as your car wreck of the day?
Car wreck of the day, going back to Saturday night in San Antonio. The security guard on a power trip that did not let Hakeem Olajuwon celebrate on the court with the Houston Cougars. I mean, that to me is such a layup of so easily a power trip gone wrong.
If you're the NCAA, you want that. You want that, and you want all the cameras catching that. If you're if you're the Cougar people, you want that. I thought that someone that I thought was with the Cougars was trying to explain to the security guy, hey, you know who that is. And then I've never, in all the years I've known Dream and been around him, I have never seen Dream look that embarrassed and befuddled about what was going on, because I don't think that anybody's ever done that to him. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm pulled up the video now, and he just looks stupefied. But he's like, what is happening right now? That is crazy. And, you know, like, Olajuwon isn't going to be the type of guy that is going to cause a huge scene about this.
But I'm willing to bet he probably got the tickets from the NCAA, too. I know the Cougars probably helped and knew where he was sitting. But you don't sit a guy of that prominence on the court, right there near the court, without wanting to get exposure for him. But then after his alma mater, where he was a huge success there, wins the game and he wants to go celebrate and slap his guy's hands for a great photog opportunity, you say no?
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, the last guy to win a Final Four game in a Cougars uniform. That guy, right
there.
That's
right.
Absolutely inexcusable, and I am 99% sure that if they win tonight, he will be on the court. He will be the message.
Someone better have fixed it.
The message will get sent.
All right, and my first one goes out to the Pittsburgh Pirates, doing Pittsburgh Pirates-type things. Over the weekend, Roberto Clemente Jr. had to send out on social media a letter he wrote and then wrote one to the Pittsburgh Pirates because, oh, by the way, in right field, where Roberto Clemente was a Hall of Fame player, where his name and number were on the actual wall on signage to honor him as a one-time member of the Pittsburgh Pirates, they decided to just put a sponsor can of like a beverage over where that number 21 was, and they didn't even tell the Clemente family. That's a car wreck and a half. That's a horrible look. And then he has to soft sell it at the end by going, hopefully with the great relationship we've had with the Pirates, we can find a way to work this out. What the hell are you doing if you're the Pirates?
No, 100% unforced error. Super gross to handle it the way they handled it. From the top down, absolutely disgusting stuff.
Okay, but what wins? I think it's pretty.
I mean, today we can't. We have to give it to Dream.
On a Cougar Red National Championship game Monday, how can you not vote for the idiot who disallowed Hakeem Olajuwon a chance to celebrate with the Cougs on the floor. You dumbass. I did ex-Rocket Eddie Johnson was on Twitter going, this guy should never, he should be fired. He should never have a credential to do anything on a sporting event again. I was like, I'm not going to go that far.
You see what Vernon Maxwell said?
Yes, I did.
Of course. He had a different take.
Yeah, and we're not going to repeat that on the air because he kind of crossed some lines in doing it, but that's Vernon being Vernon. Went wrong. But that's not Dream either. Dream's not going to hit anybody. All right, so that's our car wreck of the day. Hopefully the car wreck of the day tomorrow isn't the Cougars. Hopefully they get a big victory tonight and get that national championship for the university and for the city. We have enjoyed having you as part of the program. The voice of the Cougars will be with us again tomorrow, Jeremy Branham, as he is recovering, hopefully, from a victory celebration. But in the meantime, Sean Mapes, we appreciate all your hard work and efforts, especially doing double duty, and everybody here at the venue, which is FAO Midtown. We appreciate you guys, too. Come on, watch the game here. It's a great place. The promo team here, everybody here. Todd, our boss, is here. You guys should be here, too. We'll talk to you tomorrow as we get national programming from ESPN coming up next right here on the station. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. Have a good night, everybody.
ESPN 97.5.